Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio from Monday, November 2nd, 2020. One final day to sway voters, with the presidential candidates concentrating on, no surprise, battleground states where polls show tight races and which could decide after Tuesday's election whether President Donald Trump is reelected or Democratic challenger Joe Biden takes office. The latest from the presidential and vice presidential nominees just ahead. And we will talk with Walter Shapiro of The New Republic about what election night may look like and how long before we know the winner. Plus, political analyst Charlie Cook on the battle for the Senate and whether Republicans can hold their majority, currently at three seats. Also today, new Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett takes part in her first oral argument, a case involving an environmental group seeking government documents. And British Prime Minister Boris Johnson takes questions in the House of Commons on his plan for another economic lockdown to curb the spread of the coronavirus. And now to the final sprint for the White House. Final USC Dornsfire Daybreak poll showing Democrat Joe Biden with a 10-point national lead over Republican Donald Trump. But of course, it's the state-by-state battles that count as each candidate strives to reach 270 electoral votes. President Trump making his final pitch with five rallies in four key states: North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan. First stop, Fayetteville, North Carolina, at the airport, an event that was rescheduled from last week due to bad weather, the remnants of a hurricane. Here's the president.
A recent Gallup poll found that 56% of Americans say they are better off today than they were 4 years ago under Obama and Biden. You gotta remember that kind of thing. They didn't do a good job. In fact, if they did, I wouldn't have run. If they did, I wouldn't be here right now. They did a bad job. And Obama, he went out yesterday with Biden. They got like 14 people. They didn't have too many. They didn't have too good a crowd. And we have five of these today. Five. We have some big ones like this. Thank you very much. Thank you. And I love you too, and I appreciate that. I was thinking coming in because I watch these fake polls, everyone, no matter if we're up by 10, if we know we're going to win easily.
He's down by 1 point. He's down by 1.
I just watched this fake stuff, and I said to myself, you know, we've been under a phony fake hoax investigation for 3 years. Nothing but bad and really corrupt publicity from these people. And I say, I wonder what the difference would have been had it been legit, right? Had it been legit. And it turned out to be just the opposite. They were the ones who committed the crimes, not us. But I wonder what it would have been. I probably would have been a little bit easier, but you know, the good news, we're going to win anyway. We're going to shove it. I wonder what it would have been if all of the nonsense wasn't brought up. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
President Donald Trump in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Former Vice President Joe Biden, the Democratic candidate this year, meanwhile focusing heavily today on Pennsylvania. But he started his day in Cleveland, Ohio, joined by U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown.
Folks, I want to thank my buddy Sherrod Brown. No one fights harder for the dignity of working people than Sherrod does. Sherrod won re-election in 18 about the same margin that Trump did. And so when Sheriff tells me to come to Ohio the day before, I come to Ohio. That's what I do. Because he and I have something in common. We married way up. He married a Pulitzer Prize winner. I married a professor. And I tell you what, Connie, you've been wonderful. Connie actually reviewed my wife's book, I found out. At any rate, I want to thank you for being here. Folks, Ohio, one more day. One more day. Tomorrow we have an opportunity to put an end to a presidency that's divided this nation. Tomorrow, we can put an end to a president that has failed to protect this nation. And tomorrow, we can put an end to a president that has fanned the flames of hate all across this country. Millions of Americans have already voted. Almost 100 million have voted so far. 100 million voted already. And more are going to vote today. And my message is simple. The power to change the country is in your hands. I don't care how much Donald Trump tries. There's nothing he's going to do to stop the people in this nation from voting. Folks, he hadn't figured it out. Presidents don't determine who gets to vote. Voters determine who's going to be the president. When Americans vote, America will be heard. When America's heard, I believe the message is going to be loud and clear. It's time for Donald Trump to pack his bags and go home. We're done. We're done with the chaos. We're done with the tweets, the anger, the hate, the failure, the irresponsibility. We've got a whole lot of work to do. And if I'm elected your president, I'm going to act, and I'm going to act on day one. Folks, we're going to act to get this COVID under control. On day one of my presidency, we're going to put into action a plan that I've been talking about for months and he's been paying no attention to. Masking, social distancing, testing, tracing, a plan for a fair and full and free distribution of therapeutics and vaccines when we get one.
Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden today in Cleveland. By the way, Donald Trump won Ohio in 2016 by 8 percentage points. To help you follow the election results Tuesday night for president, the U.S. House and U.S. Senate seats, also governor's races, C-SPAN will be partnering with Associated Press. AP Deputy Managing Editor David Scott explains how the vote is counted.
There's really nothing like a general election in the United States because it's a collection of 50 separate state elections, plus those in D.C. and the territories. The rules are all different. Some states start counting ballots only after polls close. Some others will begin counting advance ballots days before polls open for in-person voting on Election Day itself. And the pandemic has scrambled those rules even more, with almost every state making some change in how they'll carry out this year's general election due to COVID-19. The AP vote count is likely the largest collaborative single effort in all of journalism. In 2020, AP will count the vote in more than 7,000 races. More than 4,000 reporters and stringers spread out nationwide will work with hundreds of vote entry operators, election coordinators, data analysts, engineers, and others to collect the vote and report the results. At every point along the way, no matter how that vote is reported, AP uses a number of quality control checks to make sure we're not making a mistake and that county election officials have not made one either. And this year, we're doing it in a pandemic. It's not the first time we've counted the vote under difficult circumstances. Working with all those different state laws and procedures in past elections means we're well-equipped and have the experience needed to work with all of the new laws and procedures that have come into place because of the coronavirus. And we do all of this in real time so that the American people, and indeed the world, will not have to wait a moment longer than is absolutely necessary to know who will next come to work every day in the Oval Office. I'm David Scott, a deputy managing editor at the Associated Press.
AP says it's been calculating the presidential election results since 1848. And on election night, you can get the latest numbers, winners, and projected winners across the country at cspan.org. And watch our coverage Tuesday starting at 9 p.m. Eastern on C-SPAN television or listen on this here on C-SPAN Radio anywhere on the free C-SPAN Radio app. Vice presidential candidates also hitting key states today. Vice President Mike Pence in Pennsylvania and Michigan. Democratic candidate Kamala Harris also in Pennsylvania. Here is Mike Pence in La Trobe, Pennsylvania.
It is one more day to four more years. To Congressman Joyce, to all of you who have been with us every step of the way, it is great to be back in the Keystone State. And when you join me in showing appreciation for a Marine Corps mom who's been working her heart out for military families all across this country, my wife of 35 years and the best second lady of the United States in the history of this country, Karen Pence, everybody. But we're all here just like you. We're all here for one reason and one reason only. And that is that Pennsylvania and America need 4 more years of President Donald Trump in the White House. It's on, Pennsylvania. And the road to victory goes straight through the Keystone State. You know, I like this guy back here. You know, 4 years ago, you believed we could be strong again. You believed we could be prosperous again. You said yes to President Donald Trump in 2016. And seeing you all come out on this brisk Pennsylvania November day, I know Pennsylvania is going to say yes to 4 more years of President Donald Trump in 2020. We need you to do just like you did in 2016. Tomorrow, we need the people of the Keystone State to show America that Pennsylvania is Trump country.
Vice President Mike Pence in La Trobe. Senator Kamala Harris, Democratic vice presidential nominee, also in Pennsylvania. She was at a union canvass kickoff in Pittston.
And, you know, on this eve of the election, I just actually want to talk about Joe. I'm not going to talk about the other guy. I don't feel like talking about him right now. I just don't. I'm going to talk about Joe. So let's talk about Joe and the Joe we know, right? I mean, listen, when we think about the challenges that we're facing as a country, and Joe talks about this all the time, he talks in particular about the 4 crises, right, that are front and center and have converged. There's obviously the pandemic. Now, let's think about this. It is a public health crisis of a proportion that we have never seen. I say it's a mass casualty event that probably is equal or greater to what we experienced in World War II. People are suffering. Over 225,000 people have died in just the last several months, and so many without their family because of the nature of this, to just hold their hand in their last days, and for any of us who have had that awful experience, to not be with your family member, to tell them you love them, in those last moments, it's awful. Over 9 million people have contracted the virus. Many, you know, doctors are saying going to have long-term consequences, lung scarring, things like that. And, you know, here's the thing about Joe in a moment like this. First of all, Joe, without having had the benefit of the inside information like you-know-who, and we know what you-know-who knew because Bob Woodward told us. Joe, back in March, because he had an experience with Ebola, because Joe has been a leader and a dedicated public servant his entire career, because Joe is a student of issues and history, Joe back in March told us what we needed to do about this pandemic. And he's not even in elected office when he said it. Joe knew the importance, and you all know, because if you know his story, Pennsylvania knows his story more than most. Joe has seen suffering. Joe has spent far too much time in a hospital with the people he loves. So Joe is somebody who, born out of awful sacrifice and commitment, together with President Obama, created one of the most significant public health policies, dare I say, public policies we've seen, some could argue, since Social Security, when they got passed the Affordable Care Act that brought health care to over 20 million people that didn't have it.
Senator Kamala Harris, Democratic vice presidential nominee, outside a local union office in Lucerne County, Pennsylvania, a county that voted twice for Democrat Barack Obama for president, but then switched to Republican Donald Trump in 2016. We're finding out more today about the plans for election night for the candidates. President Trump will be hosting a viewing party for 400 invited guests in the White House East Room, according to reports from Reuters and the New York Times. White House Director of Strategic Communications Alyssa Farah spoke with reporters outside the White House.
Can you tell? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Walk us through tomorrow, what we should expect, how many people, precautions being taken.
So the president's eager to watch results from the White House, which only the incumbent president gets to do. It's going to be a small group of, you know, supporters, White House officials, key advisors. There'll be different victory parties around town, but the president's going to be here focusing on the results and then what his plan for the next 4 years is going to look like.
And so where will that take, just for clarity, in the East Room? How many people when you say small group?
I would defer to the East Wing for the specifics of it, but I know we'll take precautions. We'll be testing individuals. We'll be doing the different screenings that we do, but I defer you to the East Wing.
Are you talking dozens of people or hundreds of people?
I'm not privy, actually, to the invite, so I'd refer you to FLOTUS.
Do you think the president would go to any other events around town, or do you expect him to stay here physically all night?
That's a good question. I'm happy to get back to you, but he looks forward to watching returns from here.
Top White House aide Alyssa Farah. Last week, it was reported the president had wanted to hold a large party at his Trump International Hotel down the street, but that it was called off because of coronavirus city restrictions forbidding gatherings of more than 50 people. Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden plans to watch the election night returns from his home state, Delaware. Joining us now to talk about election night is Walter Shapiro, staff writer with The New Republic. Thanks for being with us. Walk us through that night. What do you see? How do you see it playing out? And will we know the winner in the presidential race before daylight Wednesday?
I think we may not. There are two ways of knowing a winner. There is the winner. There is the official calls of the networks where there is the effect, the equivalent of a TV screen balloon drop, lights go off, new president, blah, blah, blah. And then there is the strong indications of how things are pointing. I wrote a piece in the New Republic today that I, for one, I'm going to be looking at Ohio. Unlike the other Rust Belt states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, particularly Pennsylvania, Ohio will count the votes fast. And there is about a 95% chance, people tell me, that we will know who carried Ohio by midnight. What that means, if it's Barack Obama, Joe Biden, God, I'm fatigued already. If it's Joe Biden, Ohio basically has 18 electoral votes, which is almost the same as Pennsylvania. And even if the election is close and Trump pulls it out, it will not bode well for Trump in terms of the other Midwestern Rust Belt states. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. I'm also looking at other early reporting states that count votes fast. North Carolina is one. Arizona will be one once you allow for the time zone change, for the time zone difference from the East Coast. So I think we will have a lot of strong indications on election night, even if we don't have an answer.
What do you make of the red mirage scenario that's been floated? President Trump appearing to be ahead based on in-person day of voting and declaring victory before the mail-in votes are added that would show Joe Biden winning.
Well, this is a scenario which has been out there for 3 or 4 months. And first of all, the difference is in prior is that the decision desk at all the networks and the Associated Press have been admirably consistent in saying that they will not consider anything as definitive based on fragmentary, incomplete results. A lot of the red mirage was always assumed that all these states would be colored Republican red based on early votes. What they're going to be colored is white based on too early to call. And while I don't what I am hoping, and maybe this is the triumph once again, as Dr. Johnson would put it, over of hope over experience, that at minimum Republican senators and House members who know election law will prevent Trump from claiming, making outrageous claims about their states, based on fragmentary results. But we've never had a president who has not agreed to abide by the results of a free and fair election. So what Trump does on election night is worrisome, but I'm really hopeful that the only people who will accept it as the gospel might be something like the One America News Network or other Trumpian mouthpieces. It won't be Fox News based on everything their people on the decision desk have said.
Well, another scenario is that President Trump doesn't declare victory, but says there may have been some irregularities. Over the weekend, he said that first we're going to vote and then we'll bring in the lawyers. What does that say to you?
Well, it is one. Well, what it says to me is two things. Number one, Donald Trump has more problems keeping a secret than a seven-year-old boy who stumbled on a closet filled with early Christmas presents. Number two, you bring in the lawyers when there is a close disputed election. You don't bring in the lawyers just because you're fearing you're going to be losing some key states. And, you know, this is a very worrisome time. But what I am encouraged by is that the news media has been warning people, and that remember, of the five elections in this presidential elections in this century, only the two Barack Obama elections were actually called on election night. Even Trump 2016 wasn't called to 1 or 2 in the morning. And George W. Bush's victory over Donald Trump wasn't called. I'm not Donald Trump. Boy, am I messing up. Over John Kerry wasn't called until about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday. And don't get me started on 2000 Bush versus Gore.
We're talking with Walter Shapiro with The New Republic. Okay, let's fast forward a little bit, and we've got a victor. Let's say President Trump is reelected. What does he say election night to, well, what does he say election night? We'll leave it at that.
I've just fired Anthony Fauci. I mean, the fact is that everything we know about Donald Trump means that he would revel in the yeah, I can now do anything I want, triumphalism of the moment. The idea that suddenly, having been elected to a second term, Donald Trump will suddenly wake up and say, you know, it's time for me to be presidential. I'm going to lower the decimal tone and bring America together. Having not had one day like that since the 2016 election, let us merely say that I don't think the odds of it are high. I think this will be just election night for Donald Trump will be just another catalog of grievances and orders to open up a new investigation into Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, Hillary Clinton, and, oh, for the heck of it, Grover Cleveland and Harry Truman.
On the flip side, if Joe Biden were to win, what does he say? And I guess we should bring in the fact that cities businesses in cities and government agencies here in Washington are starting to board up their buildings.
Which I hope will be unnecessary. I hope that this is one of those moments where fears of actual violence and demonstrations are exaggerated. But what I think Biden will say is that Biden will say is we're all Americans. We're all Democrats and we're all Republicans, but we're one people, and I will work to bring us together. I think that Biden's message would be one of calm, unity, and a sense of we are weathering a crisis as a nation in terms of the pandemic, in terms of the economic collapse, and in terms of the challenges to democracy. And this is a hopeful sign that we're coming out the other side.
And finally, what might happen on election night that would make you say after, wow, that was a big surprise, never saw that coming?
Let's see. I have a couple of long shot things which I'm not sure is going to happen. and I wouldn't bet on it, but I wouldn't think that it would be totally off the charts. One might be Mike Espy picking up a Senate seat in Mississippi, the first black who would become the first black Democrat since Reconstruction, the first black Democrat ever to win a Southern Senate seat. It is possible that the Joe Biden electoral vote could hit 400. Again, there are many things we don't know. I'm on the higher side of likely scenarios than many are in terms of Biden. But the fact is that I could also see a 3 or 4 Senate vote majority for the Democrats. But at the same point, one can also see a close election. So, at this point, after 4 years of Donald Trump, it takes a lot to feel gobsmacked.
Walter Shapiro, staff writer with The New Republic. Thank you very much.
Oh, listen, thank you.
Walter Shapiro, also a columnist for the Capitol Hill newspaper Roll Call and a lecturer in political science at Yale University. He is covering his 11th presidential campaign. Associated Press reporting today President Donald Trump and his reelection campaign are signaling they will pursue an aggressive legal strategy to try to prevent Pennsylvania from counting mailed ballots that are received in the 3 days after the election. The matter could find its way to the Supreme Court, especially if those ballots could tip the outcome in the battleground state. Supreme Court heard cases today, and we'll have more on that when Washington Today continues in a minute.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. Twitter says it will put a warning label on tweets by U.S. political candidates, campaigns, and other highly visible accounts that attempt to claim victory before official results have been declared. Twitter says the official results must be declared by two separate national news outlets. The FBI acknowledges that federal authorities are reviewing a Texas highway incident from Friday in which a vehicle caravan waving Donald Trump flags swarmed a Biden campaign bus carrying staff. It's one of several incidents involving so-called Trump train caravans across the country. And from Bloomberg Law, the U.S. Supreme Court rejecting correctional officers' claim of qualified immunity in what the justice said was an egregious case from Texas involving prison officials who confined a man naked for days in filthy cells. In an unsigned petition, the justices Monday took the rare step of ruling against law enforcement in a qualified immunity case. The vote was 7-1, with Justice Clarence Thomas dissenting. New Justice Amy Coney Barrett did not take part. But Justice Barrett did participate in her first oral arguments today after joining the court last week with a Senate confirmation vote, and she was welcomed aboard by Chief Justice John Roberts.
Before we commence the business of the court this morning, it gives me great pleasure, on behalf of myself and my colleagues, to welcome Justice Barrett to the court. Justice Barrett has taken the oaths prescribed by law, and her commission will be duly recorded. At a later time, we will have a special sitting to mark the occasion. Justice Barrett, we wish you a long and happy career in our common calling.
Chief Justice John Roberts. The first case was U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service versus Sierra Club. It deals with what Environmental Protection Agency records that environmental group can get. The Supreme Court is still hearing oral arguments by teleconference as part of its coronavirus safety measures, and that meant the questions from the justices were structured rather than a free-for-all. The Chief Justice asked his questions first, and then the other justices did so in order of seniority, and that meant Barrett went last. Here was her first question to the assistant to the Solicitor General, Matthew Garnieri.
Justice Barrett?
I want to pick up on the thread that Justice Kavanaugh was just exploring with you. You said that if a government official simply stamped draft on it and sent it over, and as Justice Kavanaugh is positing, did so in order to avoid FOIA disclosure requirements, you said that a court might look at other factors to determine whether it's still final. What other factors would a court consider?
I think a court might look to the treatment of the document within the agency's process, and there are circumstances in which the lower courts have found that the labeling of a document as draft might be considered pretextual, if you will, in light of other evidence about the processes that generated the document or the consequences that were attached to the document within the agency's administrative process. But, you know, here, those factors tip decisively in our favor. We have the declarations making clear that the agency decision makers didn't reach a final decision. We know that they didn't publicly issue the December 2013 drafts, even though a final biological opinion is publicly issued. And we know that they had committed in advance to share a draft with the EPA, and they didn't even reach that point because they determined that more work needed to be done with these with the draft opinions that were presented to them in December 2013. So those are all kinds of peripheral considerations that a court might take into account in determining that the label of the document as draft is in fact accurate.
Question from Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett in her first oral argument today, held via teleconference. You can find the oral argument at our website, cspan.org. There's a case on the docket for Tuesday, Jones v. Mississippi. It concerns whether the Constitution's Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishments requires a finding that a juvenile offender is permanently incorrigible before the juvenile may be sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. We'll have live coverage of that oral argument on Tuesday starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. And looking to Wednesday, there's a case out of Philadelphia that involves religious rights and LGBTQ non-discrimination protections. This is Washington Today. From BBC News, COVID-19 deaths could be twice as high over the winter as they were in the first wave of the pandemic, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson telling members of Parliament. In a common statement, he said there was no alternative as he seeks to win support for a planned four-week lockdown in England starting Thursday. Over the weekend, the United Kingdom topped 1 million coronavirus cases, over 46,000 deaths. They've been dealing with 20,000 new cases every day. Here's a question today in the House of Commons from Labour Member of Parliament Kevin Jones to the Prime Minister, leader of the Conservative Party.
Participation in sport is vital for our nation's physical and mental health. Now, the Prime Minister on Saturday night at his press conference triumphantly announced that the Premier League would continue, but his announcement today means that local amateur football will not be able to continue. Golf clubs and gyms are going to be closed, despite their valiant efforts to ensure that they're COVID safe. So can I ask the Prime Minister to publish the specific scientific data behind these set of decisions?
Mr. Speaker, I'm happy to provide all the scientific data on which these decisions have been made, but I think what the House will appreciate is that for any particular human activity, you can always find an arguable exemption from these measures, or for many of them. The difficulty is that to be consistent and to have a package that works, you need to have a thoroughgoing series of measures of the kind that we have described. I bitterly regret that we have to curtail for 28 days football clubs and sporting activities in the way that we are. I bitterly, bitterly regret it. But that is, I believe, necessary to get the R down.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson in the House of Commons today in London. Here in the U.S., there are currently nearly 50,000 people hospitalized due to COVID-19, as the number of cases just went over 9 million. Back to the U.S., and tomorrow's Election Day. In addition to the presidential contest, Americans will be voting on which party controls Congress. For the Senate, 35 out of 100 seats are up this year. Many more incumbent Republicans than Democrats in close races. But Democrat Gary Peters of Michigan is just 5 percentage points ahead of Republican John James in a new Detroit Free Press poll. Both sides looking to star power in their TV ads. Former President Barack Obama and musician Kid Rock.
When you're president, you learn real fast who has your back. And in Michigan, that was always Gary Peters. Gary was there every step of the way, helping save the auto industry, protecting the Great Lakes, covering pre-existing conditions. Today, the progress we made together is under attack. But Gary Peters is someone I trust to protect it. Gary understands what our legacy means for your families. I'm Barack Obama, and I hope you'll vote for my friend, Gary Peters.
I'm Gary Peters, and I approve this message.
Hey, Michigan, it's Kid Rock. And you have a chance to put a real-life American badass in the U.S. Senate instead of a career politician. And that badass is John James. John is a West Point graduate, combat veteran in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and a job creator. John James was successful before he got into politics, rather than use politics to be successful. He wants to help others create jobs and put Michigan to work. He understands Michigan. We'll work to make our family stronger, get our communities more involved, and help our neighbors first. John is the leader we need in the U.S. Senate. It's the warfighter versus the gaslighter, the combat veteran versus the career politician. Next Tuesday, remember to vote for John James for U.S. Senate.
I'm John James, candidate for Senate, and I approve this ad. Paid for by John James for Senate.
Some of the ads running in the Michigan U.S. Senate race. Will the Republicans keep the majority in the Senate when all is said and done? Charlie Cook, editor and publisher of the Cook Political Report, was on this morning's Washington Journal program on C-SPAN.
Well, people tend to look at the Senate more in kind of a binary way, that either Republicans hold the Senate or that Democrats pick it up. When I would look at it a little differently. There's, yes, if Republicans can hold their losses down to a seat or two, so they go from 53 to 52 or 51, you know, that's obviously, you know, they're dreaming about. They're sort of resigned that they're going to have a net loss of a seat or two. It's just how many is it going to be? But then on the other side of the equation, if Democrats pick up three seats and it's 50-50 with and Biden wins, Kamala Harris breaking ties, or four seats, that's one kind of Senate with some people like Joe Manchin and Angus King and other, you know, relatively centrist Democrats having a lot of leverage over what's coming through the Senate. But on the other hand, the bigger the number goes, and when you've got nine, I mean, there's one Democratic seat that's definitely going Republican, that's Alabama. And the only other Democratic seat that's in any jeopardy at all is Michigan, Gary Peters. And, that's not that close. I don't think that one's going to go. But you've got nine Republican seats that are just teetering on the knife's edge. And in fact, I'd say three of them have been behind for a good while and I think are likely to lose. And then six more that are really close. I mean, Iowa, really close. Montana, really close. Both of the Georgias are really close. So you could see Democrats picking up only a seat or two, one end of the spectrum, all the way to Democrats picking up a net gain of seven or eight seats. It's a real wide range here, and it depends on which way the toss-ups go. And we know from history that the races that are like toss up at the very end, they never just split down the middle. You know, half going Democrat, half going Republican, and on average 70% break one way or break the other. And then the final thing is that we're getting more parliamentary. I mean, people are voting red Republican or they're voting blue Democrat. And if they're in the mood to punish a Republican like they were Republicans like they were in 2006, it can be an ugly night for Republicans. If they're in a night to punish Democrats like they were in 2010 and 14, it's an ugly night for Democrats. What we're seeing now is the kind of environment that you have in a really bad year for Republicans. It's like, it's as I said a little while ago, it's like a wave year and a wave presidential year. I've only seen one in my life, and that was in 1980, the Reagan-Carter. And Governor Reagan's lead over President Carter, or his win over Carter, was 10 points, which is basically where the more reliable national polls are showing this race at 9 or 10 points.
Charlie Cook with the Cook Political Report. As for the U.S. House, he predicts the Democrats, who currently have a majority of 232 seats to 197, will expand their margin by 10 to 15 seats. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 423 points, NASDAQ up 46, S&P up 40. CNBC reporting U.S. manufacturing activity accelerated in October, with new orders jumping to their highest level in nearly 17 years, amid a shift in spending toward goods like motor vehicles as the COVID-19 pandemic drags on. Thanks for being with us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen anywhere and get our podcasts at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a good evening.